Okay, so we start. We have the pleasure of having Aaron Kapitelnik, which besides the talk about enology, is going to give us a talk about time reversal breaking and unconventional superconductivity.
Thank you. Thanks for the organizer for the very short notice in inviting me here. I had to decide on a very short notice on what to talk about. So I decided I'm going to talk about some, if I get to them, because I was told that it's very firm, 30 minutes, to talk about some new results not yet published, but I think extremely exciting, that has to do with some topological superconductor. But before I get there, I want to give some overview. In any event, most of the work that I will talk about today was done by Elizabeth Chem and Didi Wei, a new postdoc in my group. And theory we have been doing together with Jörg Schmalian and Roni Tomale. And the exciting work is done in collaboration with Claudia Felser and Chandra Shekhar from MPI in Dresden. So just very quick on superconductivity and time reversal symmetry breaking. If we start with a pair wave function and we write it separating the orbital and the spin part and the center of mass, then we know that that need to be totally anti-symmetric under a change of particle exchange. So k goes to minus k, sigma will go to sigma prime for the spin, which then classify the possibilities of either even or odd parity pairing, where even is spin singlet, and L, the angular momentum, can be 0, 2, 4, etc. The old superconductors are simple spin singlet superconductors. Odd parity with P wave L equal 1, etc. will be spin triplet. I will talk about actually the order parameter, which is basically has the same symmetry as this pair wave function. Now, the most general form, if I have this spin singlet spin triplet, is to write a combination of the two, which can be written in this way, and then the delta, these are the order parameters for the spin singlet, and the spin triplet is the so-called d vector. For even parity, then just like for normal old superconductors, it's spin singlet, can be written this way. But for spin triplet, I need to use the components of the d vector, I have all these combinations of up down and up up down down, etc. Okay, so the important thing, and that's kind of related to this new thing I want to talk about today, is to look at the full symmetry of the crystal that we want to discuss. And in general, I will have spin rotation group, the crystal point group, time reversal, that I can add the identity for this group, and then U1, which is going to be broken in the superconducting state. So as written here, the superconducting state will break U1, but in addition, there are other symmetries that can be broken. Some are discrete symmetries that may be broken above or below the superconducting transition. So for time reversal symmetry, it's basically, as we know, it's an anti-unitary operator. So if I don't have any spin consideration, it's just the complex conjugation operator. But if I do have spin rotation consideration, then I have this piece that takes care of the spin. So if I take now this general form of the order parameter and I apply the time reversal operator to it, then I'm going to get these two pieces, which, as we know, tells me immediately what does it mean that time reversal symmetry is preserved. If delta of k is equal to the complex conjugate of delta, then it's preserved for the singlet, and if for the d vector, it's equal. In fact, actually, it needs to be equal up to an arbitrary phase factor. Okay. All right. Now if I go back and I ask myself if time reversal symmetry is broken, right? So this was if time reversal symmetry is preserved. If time reversal symmetry is not preserved, that is delta of k, for example, for spin singlet, is not equal to the complex conjugate of delta, then I can write it in terms of a real and imaginary part, and I know that then I can have these two possibilities of, say, real plus I imaginary and real minus I imaginary, and this one clearly breaks time reversal symmetry in an Ising fashion. That is, I can have these two possibilities, plus or minus. Now, similarly, I can have the same thing for the odd parity for a spin triplet. And here is an example, a P wave, so-called L equal 1, Px plus IPy superconductor will have the D vector in a quasi 2D system, will have the D vector pointing in the Z direction, but in the plane, you are going to have P plus minus I, Px plus minus IPy, and this clearly breaks time reversal symmetry, where the spin triplet is maybe in the plane, but the angular momentum of the Cooper pair can be either up or down. Okay, so two words on topological superconductors. Well, it turned that there is an analogy between superconductors and insulators, because this is written the Bogoliubov-Degen equations. For the quasi-particles of a superconductor are analogous to the what happened? I don't know. I can then have similarly to topological insulators, I can have two types of topological superconductors, and those that time reversal symmetry is broken. For example, analogy to quantum Hall topological insulator, time reversal symmetry is broken in the quantum Hall state, or time reversal symmetry invariant topological superconductors, for example, a normal 2D topological superconductors in which you have two countergoing states on the edges. So the band gap of a topological insulator is then replaced by the superconducting energy gap of that material. It works? So. No.
Maybe you have
turned it on. Okay. Yeah, sorry. And now the. Yeah. A pause, please stop the clock. Okay. So, pictorially, we can show it that this is taken from the review of Chi and Zhang. For a 2D topological insulator, you have these edge states in the quantum Hall. These are time reversal symmetry is broken with these edge states for a 2D topological insulator. It's not. Then for the superconductor, these edge states are going to be replaced by Majorana edge states. Okay. Now, if we now try to classify topological superconductors, and again, I apologize for going so fast on this introduction, but first I assume that people are familiar in this group with this, and second, I don't have much time. So first are just like for topological insulator, also for topological superconductors, we have the strong topological superconductor, or the those that have a full gap. For example, if time reversal symmetry then can be broken with a full gap. An example which is now being discussed a lot is strontium ruthenate with a P wave, that's a P plus IP, but it's quasi-2D and there is no gap. There are other possibilities, for example, the surface state of the cuprates is supposedly having a D plus ID situation. And then there are time reversal symmetry preserved three-dimensional cases like the Balian-Wertheimer state, etc. Now, there are others, especially in three dimensions, topological superconductors in which nodes can exist. For example, a time reversal symmetry broken one is helium-3a. There are nodes at the north and south. Or, for example, an F-wave superconductor UPT-3 in the B phase will break time reversal symmetry with an order parameter of this type with nodes. And there are others that are time reversal symmetry preserved. For example, the D wave of the cuprates, it's a simple dx squared minus y squared, and the time reversal symmetry is preserved. So in addition to strong nodal, there are also others that are non-central symmetric superconductors, where you can have some mixture of spin triplet and singlet, and this is going to be, if I get the punchline of this talk, where there are some interesting new results in this direction. So there is a very nice review paper by Yonezawa in which he has this table with a lot of known topological superconductors, some that break, some that don't break time reversal symmetry, and I highlighted here materials that we have results and we studied. I'm not going to talk about all of them today. But there is one thing that I want to emphasize, and I'll come back to it at the end, which is the following. If I assume, for example, some time reversal symmetry breaking state with an order parameter that has a real and imaginary part, for example, a P wave that is some amplitude delta naught times PX plus minus IPY, then I can assign these for delta, two components, the X, say delta naught on the KX, and then for Y, we'll have the imaginary part. Obviously, below TC, in the superconducting state, U1 is broken, and delta naught, that's that global amplitude, is going to be finite. However, above TC, U1 is not broken, and delta X and delta Y are zero because the amplitude delta naught is equal to zero. But above TC, as time reversal symmetry breaking is a discrete symmetry breaking, I can construct another order parameter, for example, of this type, that's delta X complex conjugate delta Y minus delta Y complex conjugate delta X, which is going to be finite above TC, despite the fact that delta naught is equal to zero above TC. That is because I'm averaging delta naught square, delta naught absolute value square, and delta naught absolute value square does not have the phase and therefore is not susceptible to this U1 symmetry breaking. So I'm going to have, if you want, it's in the fluctuation regime that I can have a finite order parameter based on this combination, and there are other combinations depending on the symmetry of the crystal, which is going to be important. So I'll come back to results on this material. So I will, of course, this is an experimental talk, as you can see. So I'm going to talk about testing for time reversal symmetry using light. So what does it mean? It's actually very simple, because if I apply the time reversal symmetry operator on a ray of light, then say if it propagates in the z direction, apply the time reversal symmetry breaking, it just takes it from going into the plus z to coming back onto the minus z. So that's very, very simple and very useful, because it already gives you an idea on how to measure time reversal symmetry breaking using light. I'm simply going to compare going and coming back lights that interact with the material. So in principle, there are two main such effects that we are going to explore, actually in this talk only the Kerr effect. The Faraday effect is that you take linearly polarized light, you go through a material, the polarization will rotate. Since linear polarization is the combination of right and left circularly polarized light, and the index of refraction for these two is going to be different because of time reversal symmetry breaking, then the linear polarization will rotate, and this is called the Faraday angle. But you can do the same thing in normal incidence reflection, and this is called the polar Kerr effect. And these are the combination, how you calculate it. If you calculate the complex index of refraction for the material for right and left circularly polarized light, which you, of course, calculate from the dielectric function for right and left circularly polarized light, then if you take the real part, you get the Faraday effect. If you take the imaginary part of this combination, you get the polar Kerr effect. So that's the only thing you need to do. So let's take an example. If you take a P-wave superconductor, and now I assume that I have Px plus Ipy or Px minus Ipy. I can have these two states of the angular momentum of the Cooper pair. I can assign to it an effective magnetic moment, mu. I can then calculate an effective magnetization for that. I'm going to use the charge of the Cooper pair and the mass of the Cooper pair and the superfluid density, which of course I can then transform to the normal charge density and mass. And then I can follow Mermin and Mutzika and calculate an effective current associated with it. And it's very easy to see that the current is, I mean, if I calculate the magnetization, the curl of the magnetization is the current. And then I can then retransform it to have it in this form. And if I have it now in this form, I can use the chemical potential for the superconductor. I can plug it in, and I get that current. And it doesn't take many steps to see that this current, this effective current, is simply going to be the sigma xy of the material. And then I'm in the plane for this P plus IP. And then there is this combination that comes from taking the gradient of the chemical potential and crossing it with the z direction. And what you get is this combination, which those of you that know superconductivity will immediately notice that this is equal to zero. This is simply a consequence of the London equations. If you take the London equations and you write them down in terms of the full chemical potential, then that's what you get. So in principle, I should not measure Kerr effect. But it turned that if I have impurity scattering in such materials, or if I have multiband, then there is a finite Kerr effect that can be calculated. So I don't want to go through all these calculations of these people. Let me just give you a hint on what is the size of the effect that we expect to see. So if you go through the, that's the expression for the Kerr effect. If you put in all this calculation, either that one or that one, you get to something that has magneto-optics, the scale of magneto-optics is always the fine structure constant. There is a very good discussion in the review paper of Shucheng Zhang and Xiaolian Shi about that. And then there is some materials parameters. And then because I'm measuring using light at the near infrared, which is going to be 1.55 microns, while the superconducting gap is going to be of order of a Kelvin, 2 Kelvin, something like that, then there is a frequency factor that reduces the signal enormously. Okay, so if I put all these together, I'm measuring at 1.55 micron, that's 10 to the 15 for H bar omega, for omega. The index of refraction is about 3, TC is about 1. You can get an estimate for what you expect to measure with the light that we measure. And that's of the order of 50 to 100 nanoradians. Now, people that measure magnetism measure milliradians, and if they get to a few microradians, so 10 or so, they struggle. So here I'm proposing that not only that I want to measure this, I want to see how this develops. So it should develop from zero, so I should measure with a much higher sensitivity. So we do that, as I said, this is what you need. You need to be able to measure to reject all reciprocal effects, all effects that don't break time reversal symmetry. For example, gyrotropy will rotate polarization, like in cholesteric liquid crystals, but time reversal symmetry is not broken. I should be able to remove that. I should measure absolute value. I don't want to put a magnetic field. If I put a magnetic field, I broke time reversal symmetry, so I want to measure at zero field, and I want this high sensitivity. Well, the way we do it is using a Sagnac effect. It's used for fiber optic gyroscopes. Let me not go through the steps, but just to mention that such a device has a beam splitter in which two counter-propagating beams, which I will make them to be linearly polarized, are going in both directions. And then if I cut that fiber and I put 2 quarter wave plates, and remember, a quarter wave plate takes a linear polarization and makes it circular, and if I take 2 of them, I created a cavity of circular polarizations. So if I now put my sample in, then I have one of the same combination going with the magnetization, the other going against the magnetization. Time reversal symmetry is broken. I need to get an asymmetry, which results in a phase shift that is proportional in this example to twice the Faraday angle. If I do it in reflection, which I can do it by simply taking the single fiber and use the polarizations of the fiber, that's a technical issue, I can get the exact same thing in reflection, and the phase shift that I get is twice the Kerr angle. Okay? And time reversal symmetry is measured, and everything else is being canceled by symmetry. Okay? So this is the apparatus. It's not that expensive. The optical components maybe are $20,000 altogether. And then you can put it, because it's just a strand of a fiber, and you can put it in your dilution fridge, helium-3 fridge, etc. And then you measure going out of the fiber, coming back into the fiber. I'm going to show data on 1.55 micron wavelengths, although we did others. So I just want to emphasize that by symmetry, this Sagnac interferometer, which we invented in my group, measures only non-reciprocal effects. Any reciprocal effect is going to be removed by symmetry. Okay, now there is another thing about it, which is technical, but I want to tell you that I can do it, which is because I have these two beams, they interfere, there is a phase shift, but there is also an amplitude. And if I measure the amplitude, I basically compare 2 circular polarizations that are hitting a sample. And if the sample is birefringent, then there is going to be elliptical, the result is elliptical polarization, but opposite. So when they interfere, I get a signal of birefringence in the amplitude. It's going to be proportional to the sine of the amount of birefringence. And let me show you that if I take, for example, lanthanum barium copper oxide is a material that has 2 structural phase transitions. One is very subtle, that's here, and one at low temperatures, which is first order, And this is the amplitude, as I said, and you can see these phase transitions of the electronic system becoming, from here it was tetragonal, now it's orthorhombic, now it's tetragonal, and I can locate these with very high precision. Okay, so to measure, I mean, if I just want to show you that I can, here is a measurement on a ferromagnet. You measure it at room temperature. You measure it without any magnetic field. You see there are small signals. You measure it many, many times because it breaks into domain, and if the beam size is much larger than the domain size, you get sometimes plus, sometimes minus. This is a random distribution. You can do the histogram and get correctly the size of the domain, although the average is zero. If you cool in a magnetic field, I'm showing that because that's what, I mean, kind of similar experiments we are going to do to the superconductors. If I cool in magnetic field, of course, I orient the system into one domain, and I get the full signal. So you see, if I do many, many cool downs without magnetic field, I can get zero, I can get just a couple of microradians or something like that, but the full signal to about this temperature of about 100 Kelvin is 2 milliradians. It's enormous, okay? All right. So the first measurement, and I decided, although strontium-ruthenate was supposedly the first topological superconductor, I decided not to talk about it because of the controversy on what is the true order parameter here. We are measuring now some results on we're having some results on the strained strontium-ruthenate. But we did in 2006 showed that strontium-ruthenate does break time reverse asymmetry below TC, and this is data, and you can see that if you can read the what it says here, it's nanoradians. So the full signal at about half a Kelvin was about 65 nanoradians, and you can see that I can track it all the way from TC. So I do have the sensitivity. You can cool it in a plus field, and you get the same signal positive. You cool it in a negative field, different fields. It's independent of the field that you cool in if you orient it in a single domain, and you get again the same result in the opposite direction. Now, a more interesting material is UPT3. This material was supposedly one of the first unconventional superconductors with two transitions. And as shown, for example, in specific heat, where the first transition was at 0.56 Kelvin, the second one at 0.48, the full phase diagram, including magnetic field, was later measured. But the idea was that analysis of the symmetry of this material proposed that we have kind of an F-wave superconductor that is kz times kx plus iky squared. Obviously, time reverse asymmetry is going to be broken, and I'm skipping some. As with this other parameter, you can have three possibilities. One is that I have just the real part. The other that I have just the imaginary part. And a B phase, which has both the real plus I imaginary. So this eta tells you what you have. And in the strictly zero field, there will be then a transition from one superconducting state to the other superconducting state, where the second one only breaks time reversal symmetry. So that's the real one, and that's the imaginary one. So we did that together with measuring AC susceptibility at the same time, not at the same time, but subsequent, in order not to apply with the coils of the AC susceptibility any magnetic field. This is the susceptibility measurement, and you see that the transition is at around 0.55 for this particular crystal, and these are Kerr effect measurements. And you see that I'm already at 4, 0.4, 0.457 and there is nothing, and time over symmetry starts only in the B phase. So this really was the confirmation that it is just the B phase of this material that breaks time over symmetry. And one can then use a simple fit for that, and well, it's consistent. We have now better data, but that's the initial data. You can do many, many cool downs and you get the exact same thing. Always you get that Kerr effect is just below the onset of B phase and not the A phase, and you can train it with magnetic field just like you did for the strontium ruthenate. Okay, so that's basically the summary of the observation, but the highlight is that the B phase breaks time reversal symmetry, and this was a confirmation using this method. Now, I said that this is kind of the highlight of I hope, of this talk. I rushed through the others. Let me come to this new material, which is a non-central symmetric half-Heusler superconductor. So we are writing this paper now. But what is this material? Half-Heusler is, take a diamond and zinc blend, put them together. You get, basically think about three FCCs that are one within the other, okay? And there are many combinations that one can do, and in the group of Claudia Felser at Max Planck, they make many of them. And the ones that we were very interested in are those that, this is the inverted gap for these materials, including the famous mercury telluride, which is here, but then there are this family of superconductors, yttrium platinum bismuth, lutetium platinum bismuth, and lanthanum platinum bismuth, that has a gap inversion of the largest that is known. So in addition, it is a non-central symmetric material. It is a superconductor below 1 Kelvin. That's the initial paper of the group of Claudia Felser. And then the fact that the surface state may have topological nature was studied by Yulin Chen very early on. And it's a very low carrier density superconductor, kind of get to be similar to strontium titanate. The interesting thing is that as people measure, and this is now from the group of Jean-Pierre Paglion in Maryland, you measure resistivity, you see that there is a very strong fluctuation regime of the resistivity. The HC2 is very, very non-traditional and magnetoresistance as well. Other measurements, the group of Anne de Visser also showed HC2 and pressure dependence, which are unconventional. But this is new data, and similar data also was obtained by, we have this for a long time, actually, before this paper. And this is STM measurements on the surface. And what you find with these STM measurements is that while TC is 1 Kelvin, that is here, then there is a gap that persists to higher temperatures, okay? And the idea was that maybe this is a surface state. So we are talking now about quasi-2D before the 3D bulk superconductivity. And this is the Kerr effect. These are recent measurements. This is raw data. Okay, nothing was averaged, that just raw data. And this is cooling in plus 70 Gauss, and that's cooling in minus 70 Gauss, so you see we can flip the size, the sign of the Kerr effect. But this is TC, and this is where the onset is for time reversal symmetry breaking. We've never seen anything like that. In all the materials that we measured, and I showed you the table, we've never seen that a TC a time reversal symmetry breaking transition occurs above the superconducting transition. So it turned out, and that's the last slide, that you can do some, because it's non-central symmetric, as I mentioned earlier in the introduction, I can have some combination of it's a mixed state of spin singlet and triplet. You can go over this to see that I can then construct an order parameter with dx, delta x, delta y being like that, but here is a combination, this is in the spin states, of the singlet and triplet. It's easy to see that if I have now a new order parameter that I define above TC, which is of the type that I showed you earlier, it's non-zero. And not only that it's non-zero, it has two states, one which is plus delta naught square, and the other which plus I delta naught square, the other is minus I delta naught square, therefore time reversal symmetry is broken above TC, and it is, since we are measuring in the 1-1-1 direction, it is commensurate with the symmetry group that will allow for this to happen. I think that then you get that the order parameter is of the A2 group out of the C3V. Okay, so the summary of that is, and this is really preliminary, this was not shown before, is that there is a weak time reversal symmetry breaking signal above TC in yttrium, platinum, bismuth. It's possible observation of a superconducting gap with increased TC and with time reversal symmetry that appears above the bulk transition. So, thank you. Yes.
Is this some other Lagging fluctuation?
Yes.
Show themselves.
Yes. Yes. This is easy. Yes.
And in principle, would show also a change in the resistivity.
Yeah. So this was actually the resistivity shows. Lagging. I mean, you will call it enhanced fluctuations already when people measure the resistivity. When we measure the resistivity, it's very rounded. But there is nothing. There is not a jump in the resistivity at around 2.5 Kelvin or 3 Kelvin.
No, it's like a Samazov Larkin. No?
But no, but it's much stronger. If you try to fit it to a Samazov Larkin, it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
No, mm-hmm. No. It's much curver than a Samazov Larkin. But
resistivity.
It's the same fluctuations. But it's the I mean, okay. The way I understand it is that if indeed it has to do with the surface, then the surface eventually will undergo superconducting transition via Costa-Lestaules. That's a continuous transition. The time of asymmetry breaking can occur then above. There is no reason for them to be at the same point. There is going to be within the fluctuation regime. There is going to be. I mean, I can have this order parameter that will be ordered below that higher temperature.
Mm-hmm. What does the heat capacity show in the fluctuation window?
There are no good. In fact, I'm not even sure if there are any heat capacity measurements. I think that one of the reasons is that. People were not able, which I think is actually I could use it as another example. People were not able to see good jump in the heat capacity, a good signature of superconductivity in the heat capacity. This material, there is no publication of this at all.
So I had Anyway, I had a question. Let's say in the last example, yttrium, platinum, bismuth, 111, there'd be multiple grains, you would imagine. And so what is the role of the grain boundaries in terms of your measurements? Are you sure it's a surface state and not a property of the grain boundaries, for example?
So, okay, we rely on the fact that it's a single crystal. I mean, in terms of the time reversal symmetry breaking, I think that if there are going to be some dislocations. So I mean, I don't think that there are going to be grains in a different direction. At least that's not what the X-ray shows.
But nevertheless, you can also imagine different surface terminations would play a role. And then secondly, I also had the same question about the strontium ruthenate. To what extent are the domain walls responsible for the signal that you're measuring? Where does the signal come from? And what is the role of the domain walls in those zero
Are you talking about domain walls of the superconducting order parameter?
No, I'm talking about the strontium ruthenate. When you said you saw some ferromagnetism, and then in zero
No, I didn't say ferromagnetism. I said I see a signal. I mean, that signal is there is no ferromagnetism in strontium ruthenate. I mean, we assign it to the superconducting order parameter. I think that in terms of the quality of the crystals and the microstructure of the crystal, this had been studied for, I don't know, this material is studied.
Probably it's partially repeating what Adi asked. So once again, when you write delta-delta, Bilyai combination, again, a simple way to think of it is fluctuation, but then there is no other critical temperature. So this delta-delta is a function of temperature, is diverging at one and only TC, and above TC it's some continuous function. Now, as far as I understand what you have shown, it's like there are two transition temperatures.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically, what I'm saying is that. The superconducting transition is a continuous transition. I have superimposed on it this discrete symmetry breaking of time reversal symmetry. I can have with the same components. I can actually show you that this can be, I can construct an order parameter that should not have the exact same transition temperature.
So then this delta-delta is not fluctuations of the superconducting order parameter, it's something else, it's some other
Well,
symmetry.
It's of delta that of the same thing, it's not,
But yeah, my only point is that Asamazov-Larkin is a continuous function with only one singularity at TC. And apparently, your delta-delta has another non-analytical point at T not equal to TC, but at higher temperature.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not exactly fluctuation. So then the question is that...
Well, okay, you can call it... I follow my fellow theorists who call it fluctuations.
But did you simultaneously possible to measure magnetic susceptibility or whether this material is paramagnetic, diamagnetic? If you just look at magnetic response,
yes.
What
so the point is that these are, I mean, that signal is extremely small.
Okay, so you don't
So you need a very sensitive instrument.
Thanks.
I think others tried to look for signatures, but at least with a commercial squid, you don't see anything. I'm sorry. Yeah, so the gap size fits the higher transition, not the bulk transition.
Let's thank Aaron for the great talk again.